Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your patience. I would like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Dave Fisher. You may begin.
Diane, thanks very much, and good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us as we discuss today the 2010 U.S. Olympic men's ice hockey team and the roster and any other topics that you'd like to discuss. We have on the call with us Brian Burke, the general manager of our team, David Poile, the associate general manager of the team, and also Jim Johansson, the assistant executive director of USA Hockey and part of the management team of our men's Olympic team. Just a couple of notes before I turn it over to Brian. We will, our entire women's team will participate in the opening ceremonies in Vancouver on February 12th, and also from our men's team, representing that team will be Jack Johnson, a defenseman on our team, and Brian Burke, our general manager. You should also know that Mike Arruzzioni, of course, from our Miracle on Ice team in 1980, will join Vice President Joe Biden and his wife Jill as part of the official U.S. delegation at the opening ceremonies, along with some other political leaders and Olympians. And we're also pleased when the closing ceremonies come around that Manny Guerrera, who was on our gold medal sled team in 2002, we'll join Janet Napolitano and other political officials and Olympians as part of the U.S. official delegation at the closing ceremonies. Tonight here in Colorado Springs on the NHL Network, live at 9 o'clock Eastern, our women's Olympic team will take on Finland, and we're excited about that right next door to our office here. And a couple other notes, just so you're aware, our opening press conference in Vancouver on the ground for our men's team will take place on February 15th. At 4 o'clock, a local time there in Vancouver, at Canada Hockey Place in the press conference room. It'll go from 4 to 5, and we will have our coach, GM, and all our players available at that. The women's opening press conference will actually be in the main press center in the Gabriella Room on February 11th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, and the same thing with that. All our players and head coach Mark Johnson will be available at that. So those are the two opening events you should be aware of. And if you did not get the note that I sent out to the media at large that details our communications team for both our men's and women's Olympic team, it had a calendar and it had media availability times and whatnot. If you did not get that for some reason, please contact me here in the office after we're done, or send me an email, and I will get that to you. And at this time now, I'd like to turn it over for the news of the day to our general manager, Brian Burke. Ricky.
Thanks, Fish. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. I always say this, and I know people shake their heads and say, why does he always say this? But we appreciate everyone joining us on short notice, especially with this particular team where we've got media covering hockey that don't traditionally or normally do so. We're grateful for that. So thank you for joining us. It's been announced previously that two defensemen that were named to our team when we announced the 2010 men's Olympic ice hockey team were withdrawing due to injury, and that would be Paul Martin from the New Jersey Devils, and last night, Mike Komisarek from the Toronto Maple Leafs. I want to express our regrets to both players that they will not be allowed to participate due to medical reasons. They're not able to participate. And wish them full and speedy recoveries, and also thank the staffs of both teams for their cooperation in this. It's our pleasure to announce that those two players have been replaced by Ryan Whitney from the Anaheim Ducks and Tim Gleason from the Carolina Hurricanes. These are both players who were prominent in the original decision as far as picking the teams. With Ryan Whitney, again, a good-sized player with mobility and puck-moving skills. With Tim Gleason, a good-sized defenseman with a hard edge to his game and a physical presence that we think we're going to need in this tournament. Both character guys, both have gladly answered the call for Team USA in the past when asked to participate. So we're very pleased to announce that these two defensemen will be joining the roster. And David addressed the process we followed in replacing these two, but I just mentioned that the group that's put this team together, I'm the general manager, David is the associate general manager, Jim Johansson from USA Hockey, and Dean Lombardi, Donnie Waddell, Ray Shiro, Paul Holmgren, all guys who have contributed their own time and effort and will continue to rate players in the event that we have any further injuries at any position prior to our departure for Vancouver. So, again, our pleasure to name Ryan Whitney and Tim Gleason, and open it up for questions.
All right, let's turn it back over to Diane, and she will take us through the question and answer portion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fisher. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Our first question comes from Greg Constant. You may ask your question.
Hey, Brian, how does this, does this change anything? I mean, clearly you replaced kind of similar guys with similar guys, but as far as the makeup of the defense, how do you see this changing when you lose a guy like Paul Martin and Komisarek?
Well, they're guys that, you know, they're good players, obviously. Thanks to USA Hockey, David and I have been saying this since we went to the camp in Chicago. I do believe this team lacks the big name drawing or star power that prior U.S. teams had from the greatest generation. But I think that USA Hockey, in particular based on the under-18 program, has given us lots of options to choose from. And I think the group of players we had to choose from, I think you're right, Craig, you're picking up on a theme that we have tried to identify particular skill sets and particular jobs in putting this team together. And if you look at the replacement parts here, the players that are going in are eerily similar to the players that they're replacing in terms of what they bring to a roster for a short tournament. So in Ryan's case, a guy that, you know, has size, is reliable defensively, but also moves the puck well, a la Paul Martin. And in Tim Gleason, a guy like Mike Komisarek, who can kill penalties, block shots, finish checks, and chew up some ice time against big bodies. So that is the thinking to us. These are players who are very much alive right till the bitter end of the selection process. So they're guys who are knocking at the door before we named our team. So we view this as we're fortunate that we can add players we feel without a significant decline in the pool.
And one last question, kind of unrelated, but during the camp, Chris Chelios helped you guys out in Chicago, and I was just wondering if there was any plans further. I mean, you guys had talked about maybe bring him to Vancouver in some sort of role. Is there any involvement with Chelly coming up?
He may come up on his own, but he's not going to be part of our delegation, though. When he came to camp with us, his plans weren't clear, but I think he assumed he'd be playing in the National Hockey League and available to us during the Olympic break, but he's playing in the American Hockey League for the Chicago Wolves.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Our next question comes from Lindsey Kramer. You may ask your question.
Hey, Brian, this is Lindsey Kramer from the Syracuse Post-Standard newspaper. I was doing a feature on Dustin Brown, who's from the Syracuse area, and I'm sure you've addressed this before. I apologize for maybe kind of going off the topic here, but I want some of your thoughts just on the addition of Dustin to the team. Obviously, in his role, he brings one of those elements you just mentioned about identifying particular skill sets necessary for putting together the team. I just want some thoughts from you about him and where you see him fitting in with this team and with the style of play.
Well, Lindsey, I'll give you a quick answer. Let me give you a phone number. That rather than make all these people, let's do that off the call. My number here is 416-815-5795. And if you call me right after the call, I'll be happy. I'll give you the 30-second version. Is in Brownie, first off, he's a serving captain, so he brings leadership skills. He's actually serving as an NHL captain at this point in time. What we like about Brownie is that he's really a versatile guy in the sense that he can play on your first line because he's a proven goal scorer with a hard shot, but he's also belligerent and, you know, has good mobility. So this is a guy we feel could play really 1 through 4 in the holes on your team and can play the offside too. So in other words, he could play your first line right wing right down to the 4 hole, and he could switch over and do the same thing on the left side. And we don't have many players that are big enough and snarly enough to play in the 4 hole, but gifted enough to play in the 1 hole. So he brings the whole package: leadership, skating ability, versatility, size, and some punch on scoring.
Okay, thank you. I'll give you a call.
Thanks.
Okay, our next question comes from Jim Jameson. You may ask your question from Vancouver Province.
Hi, Brian. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, Jimmy.
I just want to ask you actually a two-part question. You know, you've been painted as somewhat of an underdog in this tournament. Would you agree with that, and how much do you welcome that going in? The second part would be totally unrelated, but just wondering about David Booth. He's just coming back from this concussion, which a lot of people have said that it probably kept him off the this roster. Obviously, he's a good goal scorer. Is there any scenario where we might see him, or I guess that would you'd have to get an injury at forward, would you, in this last week or so?
Yes. Let's go back. First, it wouldn't be fair to say the injury kept him off. That wouldn't be fair for the guys that we named. But he was certainly in the hunt and very much alive until he did get hurt. I think that's as far as I'd be prepared to go. David, you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
You know, to say that if he hadn't got hurt, he would have made the team, that's really not fair to a guy who did. But he's very much alive, much like Dustin Brown. This is a big body guy with real good mobility and goal-scoring ability, not as physical as Brownie. But he is alive. You know, I met with him in Florida when we played there about 10 days ago. He was about to come back. He has played games, and he is alive in a replacement scenario. But he's by no means the only player who's alive. And in line with Craig Custance's earlier question, you know, it's like I said at Fenway Park. If you're on a job site and you break a hammer, you don't buy a drill. You buy another hammer. Like if we lose a specific role, as we prepare for this tournament, you can expect to see some, you know, duplication of that role. And so it might mean if a guy were injured that can score goals, he might be replaced by a goal scorer rather than, you know, a guy that everyone thinks should be the next guy because he's having a great year. So that's what I'd say. As far as the underdog role, Jim, we're not underdogs by design. We're underdogs. You know, there's not going to be a penny bet on this team. We know that. We accept that. We have much more faith in our group than the public's going to. But in this tournament, all the money's going to be on Canada and Russia, to a lesser extent on Sweden, and the pressure on Canada facing, you know, being the clear favorite and playing on home soil, the pressure's going to be unbelievable.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Xavier Saran from News Observer. You may ask a question.
No, this is Javier Serna with the News Observer in Raleigh. And I wanted to ask how close Tim Gleason was to making the original roster, and also, you know, what has he done since the initial decision
David?
To help?
Yes. Yeah, I just let you know, I'm
going to
say...
Hello? Yeah, David, do you want to take that one?
Sure. As you said earlier, Brian, I mean, Tim Gleason was one of, I think, 12 defensemen that we had at the orientation camp, and so he was always in the mix. And believe me, guys, ladies and gentlemen, when we put this together, I mean, there was not a unanimous decision, if you will, when we chose players, and Gleason was a player that... you know, almost made the original seven defensemen. So, as Brian also said, we're replacing Gleason, if you will, because Komisarek is out, and they're similar type of players. When I watch Tim Gleason play for Carolina, and they're playing against Washington, he's on against Alex Ovechkin, the top for Washington. When I see him play Pittsburgh, he's on against Sidney Crosby. So, I think he's a guy that's got some experience. He's been a good USA, if you will, and we've seen him in a lot of World Championships. I think he's the guy that will go to war for us, and is exactly what this team needs, and especially to replace Komisarek. So this is a pretty easy decision, you know, unfortunately for Komisarek, but I think we've got the right guy in Gleason.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Okay, our next question comes from Ira Podell from Associate Press. You may ask your question.
Thank you. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Ira. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Not that you obviously wanted to have Paul and Mike on the team, but the fact that they were injured so long ago, Paul before you announced the team, and then Mike, I think, the day after, did that sort of soften the blow and give you time to deal with it and really make good decisions of who's going to replace them?
We hope so. I mean, we haven't stopped scouting. I mean, I know a lot of people have been on these calls. You got to remember, this group was put together in the summer of 08. So this is, you know, we met that summer and put together a scouting system. You know, every team has their own rating system. We had to put one together that we're all comfortable with. And then David and I and JJ brought in the other GMs. We wanted to use the full breadth of our talent, you know, of the U.S. Born general managers. We wanted to involve as big a group and get as many viewings and as many opinions on players as we could. So this, you know, when we watch a player tonight, you know, if I'm watching a game tonight and rating players, this is a process that's 16 months old at this point. So, you know, you wouldn't just say, oh, I wonder how Tim Gleason's playing right now. Or I wonder how, you know, Ryan Whitney's playing right now. We've been rating him for 16 months, and we've focused on, from the get-go, we've talked about a body of work. The fact that a player at this time, and I noticed some questioning of different players from different other teams in the term. You know, from someone will say, oh, this Russian player, this Canadian player is not playing that well right now. Well, I think your body of work as a National Hockey League player has to carry weight, and that we agreed that we were going to focus on the body of work this player had brought to the party. And so with Paul Martin, we weren't sure right up till he told us several days ago that he wasn't going to be able to go. You know, the hope was that he would. Same thing with Mike Komisarek. He has valiantly tried to rehab an injury that will instead need surgery. But, yeah, we've been prepared, and we're still prepared. You know, there's no doubt in our mind. Well, let me state this the right way before I say it, a double negative or a dumb comment. There's a very good chance we'll have other conference calls because we're going to have additional injuries between now and when this tournament begins. And so we're on our toes now. We actually talked about the forwards, the next group of forwards that we would tap if we have a forward injury. And I don't like talking about injuries because as soon as you do, someone gets hurt. But we're trying to be prepared for every eventuality at all three positions, forward, defense, and goal, before we get on the plane to go to Vancouver.
And just as a follow-up, in Mike's situation, I mean, with him needing surgery, the decision was pretty much taken out of your hands. But can you just talk about the dynamic that you felt dealing with a player as far as an Olympic player and then so on your Maple Leafs team as well, and how that dynamic was in making a decision for short-term versus long-term issues?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ari, but I'll tell you, the one ground rule we got clear right off the bat with Mike Komisarek and with Paul Martin was that their NHL teams came first. You know, Mike Komisarek's under contract to this team for 5 years and a lot of money. And there was no pushback when I said to Mike and to his agent, I said, look, everyone understand the viewpoint here. If things work out and Mike can participate in the Olympics, great. But his primary obligation is the Toronto Maple Leafs, as is mine. And we're going to go based on whatever the doctors say. If the doctors had said surgery 10 days ago, he would have gone in for surgery 10 days ago. So there's no dynamic other than the fact he's your player and you see him every day and he's a good guy and I like him and all that. But as far as the dynamic, there's no question who these players' primary obligation is to their NHL teams.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay, our next question comes from Rod Smith from PSN Canada. You may ask your question.
Hi, Brian. Further to Mike Komisarek, he referred earlier today to a lingering problem with the shoulder from a fight he got into last season. What concerns, if any, concerns at all, did you have about his health when you're looking at him and subsequently signing him last summer?
Well, we didn't have any. He passed the physical. Every player that you sign has to pass the physical. And what happened is, my understanding, and I might get this wrong in some fashion, but I think the basic understanding was the doctor said, look, there's some damage in the joint, but a player who plays like Mike and is in the top 10 and hits some block shots every year, he's going to have some physical deficiencies anyhow. And he said, at some point it may need surgery, but he should be fine. And then he injured it again. And they said, we'll take a chance at rehabbing it. But he passed his physical to sign with us. I don't feel it was a chronic or undetected injury as much as a, you know, all these guys have injuries that have occurred in the past. It's almost like a car. You know, at some point that car is going to break down. And you might be able to drive another 90 miles before that tire gives out or the water pump goes or whatever it is. But when it goes, and you got to fix it. So, to me, we're very happy with the signing of Mike Komisarek. I told him this last night. He said, you know, I feel like the year's been a real letdown for the Maple Leafs. And I said, Mike, if I could sign you again right now, if I could go back and do that over again, I'd sign you again. Like, what he brings to a team is not just what he brings as a player. He brings leadership and vocal challenging of players. And just he's just a positive force to have around a team. So I told him, I said, as soon as you get the surgery done, you're a member of our sales and marketing staff and our community relations staff, so we're going to put him to work as a non-uniformed player.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay, our next question comes from Mike Zeinberger. You may ask your question from Toronto Sun.
Yeah, Brian, how do you replace the intangible that you just said about Mike Komisarek? And that's nothing against Tim Gleason. That's nothing against Ryan Whitney. But anybody that's been around this guy, either in Montreal or Toronto, knows what he brings the second he goes into that dressing room.
Well, I think, you know, I had Tim in the World Championships, and he's a different player. In terms of his psychological makeup, he's more a guy that speaks with actions, and he's not a chatty guy. You know, this is the guy your worst nightmare might be get stuck in a fishing boat with Tim Gleason for an afternoon, because he ain't going to do much talking. But I like the way Tim Gleason shows up and prepares for games and how he plays. So it's a little different dynamic, but these guys have been warriors for Team USA before. We don't have the same talent pool that some other countries do. We tend to go back and ask these guys to show up and compete repeatedly. They all seem to do it cheerfully. And like I say, with Tim last year, we had him in the World Championships. He was terrific. So I think he'll bring a different form of leadership for sure, but I think he'll lead all the same.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Lance Hornby from Toronto Sun. You may ask your question.
Thank you. Brian, Rod and Ira sort of stole my thunder with their questions there, but so I'll just ask you about being in the opening ceremonies, what that is going to mean to you personally.
Well, I'm thrilled. I think, you know, this whole thing is, everyone listening on the call, especially the people who go back with me, I wasn't a great hockey player. This was, you know, I got through 4 years of college through hard work. I didn't play hockey until I was 13. I walked on as a freshman. Barely made the team. I never got to represent my country as a hockey player, and there's a good reason for that. There was that damn skill requirement that they had. And so this was my only chance. You know, and the guys tease me, like JJ and Fish tease me about this, but when Art Berglund asked me in 93 to be involved to be the general manager of Team USA in the World Championships in Germany, I said to him, I'll fold towels. I told Dave Ogren a month ago, if they need me to be involved in the World Championships this year, if we miss the playoffs, if they need me to drive the bus, I'll get a Class A license. I mean, I never had a chance to represent my country in international hockey because I wasn't good enough. This is my only chance, my only way to give back for all that hockey's done for me and what all U.S. hockey did. And every time I had a question when I was a kid, I started when I was 13, but there was always a coach to show me what to do or tell me how to get there. And then the rest was up to me to work hard and get there. And I got as far as the American League, and that's all because of these people that cared. So this is my only chance to say thank you. It's my only chance to give back. So when I'm asked to be the GM, yes, I was part of the bid when I worked for the Canucks, part of the bid process to get the Olympics in Vancouver. I got to run the torch up here. These are all huge thrills for me. So to march in the opening ceremonies with the athletes from my country is going to be another one of these pinch-me things, like this whole sequence has been pinch me. How did this happen to a kid, one of 10 kids from a family in Minnesota that started playing hockey when he was 13? How did I get this lucky?
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Kevin Allen from U.S. Today. You may ask your question.
Yeah, Brian, last summer I was talking to Ken Hitchcock about being an Olympic coach, and he pointed out that in Torino, Canada showed up, and they realized that when they got there, all of their players were banged up more than they thought. And I wondered whether you closely sort of monitor just the sort of the injury level of players who are playing with injuries and just how banged up, or do you just leave it up to them to let you know if there's something really seriously?
Well, this point in the season, if you get to the middle of February or whatever today's date is, the 4th of February, you know, it's the old Vince Lombardi story. You know, mid-season, everybody's hurt. The question is, are you injured? And you get to February 4th, and the chances are every single one of your defensemen is nursing some kind of a nagging injury. And I don't say minor. I say nagging. Some of them aren't small. And you see the surgical list at the end of the season. Every team has anywhere from 3 to 7 players having surgery. These aren't small problems. They're not getting warts removed. They're getting joints fixed and bones repaired, and it's a hard grind, an Olympic year. There's a little bit of compression in the schedule, so I'm assuming that most of our players are banged up to some extent. But watching closely, I think, and I'd let David correct me if he disagrees, I think most of the guys we've named have been competing at a high level, and if they are banged up, they're either hiding it well or it's an injury they can cope with.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Pierre LeBrun from ESPN. You may ask your question.
Hey, Brian, a lot of the response I'm getting from the readers here, so don't shoot the messenger, is they wanted to see Keith Yandle for whatever reason named. Was he ever in the conversation that you can say, or was he even, there's reports out there that you couldn't even name him anyway, that he wasn't on the original doping list?
Well, we can name a player who wasn't submitted on the original doping list. Whether he was or not, a player can talk about that if he wants, but there are privacy issues here. If you go back from the very start, no one from USA Hockey has ever confirmed or denied whether a player was on the USADA list or not, and we're not gonna. But we could name a player who was not listed. It would be complicated and complex, but it could be done. So, you know, people say, oh, this guy wasn't on the list. Well, first off, we're not going to confirm that. Second, that's not the end-all and be-all. We could still, there is a mechanism to get a player involved in the Olympics who was not on the USADA list. Now, I will tell you, though, we talked about Yandle, and he's a good player. He doesn't meet the body of work standard that we set. He did not make the cut or the near cut on the roughly 10 guys that were really in the hunt right till the bitter end. And again, thanks to USA Hockey, and this second guessing is going to come, I'm guessing mostly from one area, but I'm guessing people say, what about Rob Scuderi?
Right.
You know, what about Ron Hainsey? And the answer is, you're darn right we talked about all those players, including Yandle. And we had a lengthy discussion about them, and Goligoski's another player we talked about. I keep going on the forwards. You know, we talked about Umberger. We talked about Tkachuk. So we started with the list of American-born players that played in the NHL. We added the ones – this is a year and a half ago. We added the ones that made the league as rookies. JJ's, you know, minute about the detail here. A guy – we might get a guy called up for four games who's American who now is on our list. Okay, this guy, he's not an NHLer, but he just played four games, so we're going to talk about him. So I feel that we went over if you look at the talent pool available to us, I believe it was watched thoroughly, evaluated fairly, and we have put our best foot forward as far as the team we're sending to Vancouver. If we're not successful, then the second guessing will rise to a crescendo. Right now it's just whining and muttering because people like a guy or because a guy's having a good year, but doesn't mean our body worked. You know, for example, if we have an injury at forward and someone scores 14 goals in the next three games, are we going to take them or are we going to take a guy who's been in the league 5 years with a body of work that we can evaluate? So, yes, we talked about Yandle. He's a good player. We talked about all the other – anyone else who's in the queue who wants to ask about a specific defenseman, I can preempt the question, yes, we talked about him, but if you want to ask it anyway, go ahead.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, our next question comes from Sean Fitzgerald from Canadian Press. You may ask a question.
Brian, just wondering, you talked at length about what the Olympics and what going to the Olympics means to you. Given the uncertainty about, you know, the NHL's involvement with the Olympics going forward, can you, if you were to put yourself in their shoes for just a moment, how difficult a decision it was to finally and officially sort of withdraw for both Martin and Komisarek, given that this could be their last chance?
I have to imagine it must have been specifically. I met with Mike 3 days ago to talk about it and then talked to him on the phone last night. My guess is it was an agonizing decision that caused them great anguish, but they did the right thing for the program and didn't try to bluff their way through. And we're sending an able-bodied player in their stead, and so they both acted with honor and did the right thing, but it wasn't a fun phone call, and you know, it wasn't. I talked to Paul Martin the other night from the Beanpot tournament in Boston, and I told him, I said, you know, both these players, I said, it's an awful thing that you won't be able to compete in this Olympics, and I hope that you get to compete in another one. But, I think that's, Sean, I would guess that's one of the worst phone calls they've had to make, both those kids.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Aaron Wood from AZ Vibe. You may ask a question.
Hi, Brian. Just a couple questions. How do you define body of work? And Hockey Canada pretty much defined their standard for player selection, not only with international experience, but kind of players were on a hot streak at the time having great years. How does the Team USA define their standards for player selection?
That we would want to put the best available team into the tournament, taking into account a player's past participation in the NHL and whatever international hockey that we could see.
So championship experience, international experience doesn't come into play?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brian Lebeck from WPTF AM Raleigh. You may ask your question.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to find out at what point you settled on Gleason specifically as the replacement. And, Brian, I know this is kind of an inside type situation for you because you have Komisarek on your team. Had you, Banny, I know you talked about other guys possibly going onto the roster, but had you settled on Gleason even before it was announced last night that Komisarek was going to have his surgery?
No, what happened was we've been focused on a replacement, the notion that, in other words, when we named Paul Martin, the issue was, okay, if he's cleared to play, we can't add him later unless there's an injury. So we must name him. And we spent a lot of time on this, and we all concluded, look, if he's available, we want him, so we're going to name him. And then if he can't play, he'll stand down, which is what's happened. So we've been, you know, focused on a replacement player, a potential replacement player for Paul ever since we named the team, even before that. I mean, this is a guy who's been injured since back in October, I believe. So we've been focused on adding one defenseman. And then when Komisarek got injured, we started focusing on saying, okay, we may need to add another defenseman. And so we've been watching the games and filing our reports and being prepared in the event that this happened. I've kept the other GMs up to date with where we are with Mike Komisarek's attempts to rehab this injury and avoid surgery or forestall surgery. Not only our medical staff agreed with this approach, but he went and saw Dr. Andrews in Alabama, and he agreed with this approach. But now with the lack of progress, it was time to pull the plug. So we've been watching and waiting with Paul for months and with Como for weeks. And when did we actually resolve this in favor of Tim Gleason and Ryan Whitney? We had a conference call yesterday and then a follow-up email exchange after we got the results on Komisarek. We brought our coach in as well, and then we did a conference call again today to finalize it.
And this might be more of a question for David. You hinted earlier that you had seen Gleason specifically, but everybody in general playing against top players. You mentioned Ovechkin and so forth. How much more difficult is it to decide on a guy like Gleason or Whitney who might be playing on a team not only that doesn't quite get the publicity that, you know, Komisarek might, but also that's having a disappointing season? Is it more difficult to pick out a guy that's having a good season on a team that's not?
Unfortunately, we have a problem with David's line, so he is not with us anymore. JJ or Burke, you want to jump in on that?
Well, I think the hardest thing to do in professional hockey from a talent evaluation standpoint is to evaluate defensemen on a team that's struggling. Because you look up and that team's in their end all night, and I think it's really easy to watch a defenseman on a struggling team and say, oh, this guy can't play, or he's playing really poorly right now. Same with goaltenders. And so, to me, it's the same thing watching Mike Komisarek play. We've had a disappointing season as well, but I think guys saw what he brought, the positive energy and the physical play. It's the same thing with Timmy. So, you know, and he does. He plays against top line, but, you know, a lot of the guys we've named in this tournament are guys that, that do that, and he's one of them. You know, Ovechkin comes on the ice, there's Tim Gleason. Or if they're playing, you know, they're playing, you know, whichever team has, they're playing Pittsburgh and Crosby's out there, guess who's out there? Tim Gleason. So this is not happenstance. The coaches don't pull numbers out of a hat for those matchups. He's out there because the coach has confidence that he gave him his best chance to keep this guy off the scoreboard.
All right, thanks, guys.
Okay, our next question comes from Daniel Fung from ONF. You may ask your question.
Hi, guys. A couple of questions. The first is, can you... how did the two players, Ryan and Tim, find out that they were named to the team, and maybe just let us know what their reactions were when they found out? And the second question is a little bit off topic and might be something that needs to be taken offline, but for Brian specifically, can you confirm that Grabowski was asked to not play for Team Belarus?
Well, I can tell you with Grabowski, he's not, he wasn't asked not to play. He won't be cleared to play. The fracture in his wrist or his hand has not healed sufficiently that he will not be cleared to play, so he will not be available to participate in the Olympics. Again, bad news for him. As far as how the players found out, Tim Gleason received a phone call from David Poile. Obviously, I wasn't on the call, but I know David said he was ecstatic. And I spoke to Ryan Whitney myself, and I think the ecstatic would be an understatement. He was thrilled. And we had alerted both these players. They were in the hunt, that we'd had one injury and potentially two, and that they needed to play well and be ready. And so they knew they were in the hunt, but they were both elated.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Janelle Kidd. You may ask your question from Olympic News Service.
Hi, Brian. Jeff Johnson will be walking with you in the opening ceremony. I was just wondering if you could give us a comment on what his involvement says about his character.
Well, I mean, first off, we're grateful to Dean Lombardi for letting him. He's going to have to miss practice, I assume, to go do this. And I think that's great. Most of our athletes won't be able to experience this, which is unfortunate. I think one of the hardest draft day decisions I've ever had in my life was taking Bobby Ryan over Jack Johnson. We debated that for hours and hours and hours when I was a rookie GM in Anaheim my first year there. And, you know, we really liked Bobby Ryan, but we loved Jack. We loved his compete level. We loved the, you know, his little pit bull in his game. And we agonized over that. Now, obviously, they both turned into pretty good players, but I think Jack has character. You know, obviously a good enough student to get into Michigan, and a guy that's, I think, established himself as a solid, reliable pro with some bite in his game. I think he's got tons of character.
Thank you.
Okay, and now we have a follow-up question from Jim Jamieson from Vancouver Province. May you ask a question?
Hi, Brian. Actually, there are two related questions, but one was that regarding the fact that this tournament will be played on NHL-size ice. How much did that play into the style of play that you want to play at these games, and also, you know, your in terms of who you picked in terms of personnel? Second question is regarding goaltending. I assume that Ryan Miller, you're looking at him. I saw he's having a great year, obviously, and you're looking at him to continue that and play lights out for you. And how much of a factor is that going to be in your success? Obviously, goaltending is important in a short tournament.
Well, a short tournament, goaltending is vital. None of the teams that have won in the modern era, you know, since we started sending NHL players to Nagano, none of those tournaments have been won by a team that didn't have superior goaltending. It's been a common thread for the gold medal team, and we feel a goaltending position is the one position where when people evaluate our personnel, they're going to say that's one area where Team USA doesn't take a backseat to anybody. As far as who the starter is, that'll be up to the coaching staff. I think it's safe to say Ryan Miller's been the best goalie in the NHL to this point in the season. And Tim Thomas was a Vezina Trophy winner last year. And Jonathan Quick has had a terrific first, you know, two-thirds of the season. So I think there's plenty to choose from there. And then who plays, that'll be up to the coach.
How about style of play in the NHL ice?
Oh, sorry, Jim.
Yeah.
I wrote both questions down. They've got curling on TSN here, and I'm just gripped by it as I'm watching the curling, so I was distracted. The NHL ice surface, it's definitely a factor in how we selected our players. Looking at Team Canada, I think it's definitely a factor in how they selected their players. As far as it being advantageous, you know, all the Europeans that will play in this tournament, virtually all of them are NHL players or have played significant amounts of time on the smaller sheet. I think if this were 15 years ago, it would be a real big difference and a real big advantage to Canadian and American skaters. But I think the way it is now, it's I think everyone's acclimated to the smaller ice, and I don't think it'll be a factor. But there's no question, as we put our team together, we talked about, okay, these are guys going to be playing a smaller sheet, and with the increased body contact that comes from that smaller surface, and it was definitely a factor in our team.
Okay, I'm showing no more questions in queue.
All right, Diane, thanks very much. Thanks to our participants today, and certainly thanks to the media for joining us. Again, if you have any immediate needs, feel free to call me here in the office, 719-538-1171. And for those of you going to Vancouver, we look forward to seeing you up there. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This does end your conference call for today. You may now all disconnect and have a wonderful day.